shots at breakthrough cases. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. The latest on COVID variant cases in Florida and the pace of vaccinations. Who's winning this race? Give us a call now. It's 549-2937. Then later on this Earth Day, a look at why some in the state are already planning a move to higher ground. We'll take a look at that. But first, the latest numbers on the pandemic. The state says that cases of COVID have increased overnight again by almost 6,000 to 2.18 million. Hospitalizations went up again, and deaths rose by 83 to 34,616. 8.2 million Floridians have received at least one dose of a vaccine. Meanwhile, the nation's top infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, told our partner News for Jax this week that he thinks fully opening Florida has been a risky move.
You know, unfortunately, that is a risky proposition there, because what we don't want to do is to give this virus, which if left to its own devices, is going to surge up. The important thing, as we get more and more vaccines going into the arms of people, that we will be able to control this virus and get ourselves back to some form of normality. But to prematurely declare victory by pulling back on the public health measures, I believe, is ill-advised.
Florida has the most cases of the deadly UK variant of the disease, and we are third in overall COVID cases in the country. And as I said, the infection numbers, hospitalizations, and deaths keep rising every day. So to add more to the discussion, we're pleased to welcome Michelle Aquino. She's a hospitalist at Baptist Health in Jacksonville and a medical correspondent at Action News Jax. Michelle, good to have you. Good morning.
Thanks for having me, Melissa.
And let us know your reaction to the comments by Dr. Anthony Fauci that Florida is ill-advised to fully open back up as the pandemic is not over yet. What are your thoughts about that? Have you been vaccinated? Just a second. Do you have pandemic fatigue? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. Okay, Michelle Aquino, DO, that's your title. What's your reaction to Dr. Fauci's comments about Florida?
I think he's absolutely right. You know, I know we do have pandemic fatigue, but there's certain things that we need to keep doing. And right now, doing basics, and we're not talking about anything extraordinary. We're talking about basics. Wear your masks, socially distance whenever possible, and be careful who you surround yourself around. Even if you are vaccinated, even if you are not vaccinated, you have to have the same precaution. And so that's key to help prevent this pandemic from worsening.
You know, I do notice in Duval County, despite the end of the mask mandate, that the majority of people around town, especially in grocery stores and the like, they're still wearing their masks. That's encouraging.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. I do notice that in the community, when you do go out, or, you know, restaurants, ice cream shops, I was at one the other day, Publix, all these places, Walmart, Target, the majority of people are still wearing your mask, which I'm very happy to see, because we have to remember, you know, I always recommend when you look at, you know, the mask mandates, or when you look at these big recommendations, who's giving them? Has the scientific community said stop wearing masks? No, not at all. This is a government person telling us we don't need to wear masks. And so really pay attention to who's guiding the recommendations. That's key.
549-2937 to join us. What about the UK variant, or it's also known as the B117 variant? It is the predominant strain in the U.S. now, and Florida has, I believe, the most cases of this variant, more so than virtually any other state. The U.S. is setting up a $1.7 billion national network to track coronavirus mutations. All of this is the state is open.
Important.
Yeah, we're open for business. Full stadiums, full arenas are becoming commonplace again. Restaurants are packed. As a medical professional, I can hear by the sound of your voice, this worries you.
Oh, absolutely it worries me, because, you know, these variants, there's so much unknown with these variants. You know, the British one, the one we're talking about right now, How pervasive is it? We know in Florida we have the three major variants, the British one, the South African one, and also the Brazilian one. And so, you know, when everyone gets tested positive for coronavirus here in Florida, we are not testing each person individually to see which, you know, which type of corona do they have and do they have a variant. We're not doing that yet. So right now we see cases of it, but I'm sure it's more pervasive in the community than we know. And so, you know, when people are asking me, oh, I've been vaccinated, do I need to wear a mask? Absolutely, because we have these variants here that, you know, can be a game changer in a negative direction for all of us. And we absolutely need to continue being careful.
What's your response to those who say the vaccinations aren't effective if you're telling me I still have to wear a mask after being vaccinated?
I would say that's bunk, okay, in kind words. And the reason I say that is because when you look at the effectivity of the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines, which are the ones we're talking about right now, the Johnson & Johnson is on pause, so we're not going to address that one today. But Pfizer and Moderna, we know if you get vaccinated with these, your chance of catching COVID decreases extraordinarily, okay? We know if you end up being a breakthrough case, meaning you have a vaccine, have been fully vaccinated, and still end up getting COVID, which is a possibility, you end up getting a much milder case of COVID than you would have originally. So getting vaccines is the smart thing to do at the end of the day. We need to all get vaccinated.
Okay, so then a breakthrough case, that's defined as you're vaccinated, but you still get the disease, although probably a milder case. Let's talk vaccinations as well. More than 8 million Florida residents have been at least partially vaccinated. We're probably going to need to be getting booster shots at a certain point. What can we expect with that?
All right, so boosters, this is the issue with boosters. Two reasons we would need a booster shot. So booster is for someone who has been fully vaccinated the first time around, right? They've received their full Pfizer or full Moderna vaccine. And what we know right now is 6 months in, people that have been vaccinating with those shots still have a 90% or above immunity with COVID, okay? So at 6 months out after your vaccine, you have a good, healthy immunity. The key is we don't know how long that's going to last. Is that going to stay that high going forward, 9 months, a year, or is it going to drop off? We're not sure. So Pfizer and Moderna are looking forward and saying likely in the fall or likely about a year after you have your first vaccine, you're likely going to need a booster to keep that immunity high. So number one, the boosters are for the immunity to continue keeping it high. And number two, with the play of all these variants in the community, you know, we're not sure how well overall we're going to do going forward with these variants growing within our community. And so those boosters are also for that. You know, are they going to need to change the vaccine slightly to cover the variants that are, you know, we're now worried about? So going forward, I think we're definitely all are going to need boosters. And again, you know, the variants are going to play a role in how often we might boosters and how different they're from the original shot.
Okay, let's go to some calls now for Baptist Health. Michelle Aquino, 549-2937. Give us a call. Jane in Ponte Vedra Beach. Hi, Jane. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
This is Jane in Ponte Vedra Beach.
Yep, go ahead.
And just want to let you know, the other day I was at the beach and saw a couple with a rental van from California, 20s, 30s, and I said, welcome to Florida. They said they loved it here because it was so open, and they came because California is closed. I asked them, are you going to get your shots, or did you already get them? And they said, oh, no, we don't believe in it. We're not going to get shots. And I said, well, for everybody's sake, I wish you would because it's highly contagious. And I just wanted to let you know that there are a lot of people out there who are not getting vaccinated, so I'm wearing my mask.
Sure. Thank you, Jane. Thanks for that. Michelle, half the adults in the U.S. have received at least one COVID shot. Nearly one third are fully vaccinated. Polls show that younger people and Republicans are the most hesitant to get the shot. 45% of Republicans say they won't get the vaccine. Young people getting them to be vaccinated is a big challenge, too, as we heard from Jane. And people are actually, you know, coming here to Florida from other states because it's more open than other states. What are your thoughts about that?
All that is extremely concerning. And, you know, at the end of the day, we look at this pandemic and everyone's exhausted and we want it to end. How are we going to end this pandemic? Melissa, we're going to end it by getting herd immunity, okay? And we are not going to reach herd immunity if we do not get the appropriate amount of people vaccinated. You know, herd immunity, where you read anything between 70% to 90% of the population needs to be immunized to reach herd immunity. So we don't know exactly what that number is, but we definitely need to do better than we're doing now. You know, and we are never going to reach herd immunity if we have, you know, a chunk of the younger population not getting immunized. And, you know, 45% of Republicans, how many people is that? That's quite a bit of people. So, you know, it's frustrating for the rest of us who think, okay, science makes sense. We're going to follow the science. We're going to do what we need to do to help, you know, America become, you know, safe and end this pandemic. And then we have this chunk of people that just aren't believing in what we're doing. And so that is so frustrating for all of us. And you know, can you imagine this pandemic goes on and on and on? Every year is going to be a different booster. And then we're going to have new boosters come up in the middle when new variants come up that are more, you know, are stronger than the previous variant. So seriously, when this group of the population does not get vaccinated, it just seems like this is going to be an endless pandemic. And I don't want that. I'm sure most of us don't want that. So, you know, it's really frustrating, but I'm hoping that with time people see we want to get back to normal. Vaccination is part of that equation, getting back to normal.
It is unfortunate that this has become so politicized that there's a partisan split in people who are vaccine hesitant.
Yeah, it is, you know, and it's frustrating because I'm not quite sure understanding it. I know that Mr. Trump, when he was president, got vaccinated. You know, and this is a man who had COVID and still got vaccinated because I'm sure he did not feel so good having COVID. And he was aware of the how poor the outcome can be and how scary that was for him, I imagine. So he got vaccinated. Mike Pence got vaccinated. You know, a lot of people in the Republican Party higher up are getting vaccinated. And I just don't understand why these, you know, politicians aren't going out and saying, listen, this works. We need to do this. We need to do this to open up our businesses, to make sure that America is, you know, functioning and doing well. So I don't know why that's not happening. You know, and at the end of the day, COVID is bipartisan. Does not care who you vote for. Does not matter what age you are. Does not matter what color you are. Does not matter if you were born here or born elsewhere. If you're next to someone that has COVID, and they, you know, speak in your direction, respiratory droplets get in your way, you inhale those, you're getting COVID, end of story. And so really, I think that we all really just need to look at the science on this and say it's a bad disease. It can cause a lot of harm. It already has caused a lot of harm. You know, let's get on the bandwagon and let's all work together.
If you could, tell me about some of the COVID cases you've seen at Baptist Health. Maybe that would drive home a bit more to people how serious this illness can be.
You know, Lisa, I have to say, you know, being a physician, I have a biased opinion on COVID. I completely agree to that. I will put that out there into the universe. I work at Baptist Downtown, and I work on the COVID unit quite frequently. And so when you are face-to-face with people that are here with COVID, it is such a scary experience because, listen, when you go to the hospital and you have a regular pneumonia, you have a regular urinary tract infection, or you have a sepsis from something else, or, you know, you have a heart attack, any of these things, when you come to the hospital, we can say, listen, this is what you have. This looks like the treatment you're going to receive. You'll be here approximately this many days, and let's go forward. And usually we're right. With COVID, people come in, you could be 90 years old, you can be 32 years old, healthy, not healthy. And when you come in with COVID, at the end of the day, I look at you and I say, this is what I know about COVID. We don't know a lot about it. I don't know how long you're going to be in the hospital. I don't know if you're going to make it through this hospitalization. Just have faith, know that we are working every day to make sure we get you out alive. Literally, I have a conversation with people that come in with COVID. Mm. And so I see that, and I see mid-30-year-old people that don't have a lot of medical issues, little chubby. I've seen healthy mid-30-year-olds, no medical issues, not do well. And so when I have that perspective and I see that people die that you normally would think, oh, this person's not going to die from COVID or do, you know, poorly with COVID, and they do poorly, I can tell you as a doctor who's been practicing for 20 years in medicine, I have a healthy respect for this virus.
Right.
Because it is malignant. It doesn't care who you are. and it causes a lot of damage.
You mentioned, it sure does. You mentioned chubby. Obesity is a big risk factor for COVID, and I feel like that hasn't been talked about enough.
Yeah. It's interesting because what we think is when you get COVID, you get this massive inflammatory response in your body, you know, this big cytokine storm. And we just, it seems like when you have a little more body fat, that response seems to be a little bit bigger in some people, you know, a larger response. And we think that's why that happened. So obesity is not a good thing right now. You know, and all of us with our COVID 10, 15 pounds that we've all gained in the last year and a half, that's not helping.
Yeah. Our pandemic pounds.
Obesity is a risk factor.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Here's a tweet from Robin. I've been working in a retail store for the last year where we all have to wear masks. Anti-maskers say masks don't work. Not only have I not gotten COVID, it's the first winter I've not suffered from at least one cold, she says. Thanks for that, Robin. And yes, the masks have not only protected people from the virus, they have cut down on the flu, people getting sick in the winter with colds and flu. Okay, 549-2937 to join us. Mark on the South Side. Hello, Mark. Hi, Mark. You're on the air. Hey, Mark.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I originally called in just to get you guys back to the basics, and you guys started talking about the basics just a minute ago, but then you went back to anecdotes about, talk to me about what you see in the hospital, which nobody cares about, obviously, because that's why we came up with the term COVID skepticism or COVID, where people are just sick and tired of talking about it because, you know, nobody in their immediate family has died from it, even though, you know, their neighbors have died from it and they hear people dying from it all across the country. They don't really care because nobody in their immediate family has died from it. Let's get back to the basics. The basics is, we voted for Governor Ron DeSantis 3 years ago. When we voted for him, we knew that he was another Donald Trump, and he's making the same decisions now that Donald Trump would make. He may even be taking his cues from Donald Trump himself in South Florida, and we're getting exactly what we voted for in Florida right now.
Mark, thanks for that. You know, Michelle, Ron DeSantis is a divisive figure. That said, there are plenty of listeners out there who like the fact that he's opened the state. They like the way he's governing this state, and he is certain to reference his record on pandemic response in Florida if and when he runs for president in a few years, which is widely expected. So as a physician, what are your thoughts about that?
You know, my thoughts are, he's working very hard and he has his agenda. Good for him. There's been some things that have been done in the state that I agree with, and there's other things that I don't agree with. And again, I'm coming from the medical point of view. This is not, for me, it's not a partisan issue. Okay. And let's talk about masks real quickly. When the pandemic started and I had to go into a room and sit in a room for 45 minutes with someone that I knew had COVID, I would wear an N95 mask and I, you know, have my protective gear and all that. I can assure you that none of the doctors that I work with, and there's about 80 plus doctors here that have all worked with COVID, none of us got COVID. Why did none of us get COVID? Because we wore a mask in that room, okay? So I really want to stress masks do work. And I want to say that. I think the caller's name was Robin. I want to say that. And that's important. And I want to talk about our Republican mayor here, who I think, Lenny Curry, I think he's done a great job enforcing the mask mandate here. I think that's been very important. And so I agree with that, what he has done here. Now it's not here any longer, the mask mandate. And so it's going to be interesting to see going forward how our numbers do. Listen, at the end of the day, we can only look at the numbers and look at the COVID cases and then look back and go, oh, we did that right. We did that wrong, right? So this weekend, for instance, there's a big indoor event here in Jacksonville, and it's going to be interesting to see how that goes and how many cases we have after this event to see if, you know, a big indoor event with people not wearing masks, yelling, you know, singing or whatnot, if that really propagates the virus going forward and makes Duval a hotspot for a few weeks, right? So a lot of this, despite who you vote for, you have to look at the science because, again, you have politicians telling us to do one thing and then you have the scientists telling you to do the other thing. And so vote for whoever you want. At the end of the day, I just don't want to see you in the hospital sick with COVID. That's what I want. So on this show, I'm saying, listen, for a good solid, I would say 9 months, we saw COVID patients. None of the doctors got sick with COVID. Why? Because we wore masks. So doesn't matter who's telling me to wear a mask or not. You need to wear a mask because they work. Okay, I do want to say that.
Yeah,
and again, they work. You know, going forward, yeah, they do work. They do work, period, end of story. And going forward, it does not matter who's elected. At the end of the day, you know, we don't ask, you know, for the our kids when they all get vaccinated. Has that been politicians that are telling us when to vaccinate our kids or not vaccinate our kids? No, that's the pediatricians in the United States giving us the recommendations, and we doctors follow those recommendations. And so this is a medical recommendation. Wear your mask, get vaccinated. This is not a political recommendation. And so it's tough because I think, like you said, some people have mixed those up.
Right. But,
you know, partisan issue.
But let's say it one more time. Wear your mask, get vaccinated. And thank you.
Yeah.
Michelle Aquino, hospitalist, D.O. Michelle Aquino, a hospitalist at Baptist Health. She's also a medical correspondent at Action News. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Melissa.
Well, later we'll listen to some new local releases. It's our JME Jams session, but up next.
Flooding comes in different forms. It can come as a storm surge during a hurricane. It can come as heavy rainfall and runoff, and then there's sea level rise.
On this Earth Day, a conversation with the author of the new book, Moving to Higher Ground. That's next. Well, today is Earth Day. The Biden administration has, of course, rejoined the Paris Climate Accords, and they're holding an Earth Day summit today, pledging to halve carbon emissions cuts over the next decade. That, of course, is causing the planet to warm and the seas to rise. However, one Florida author says even though those goals do need to be met, we still need to prepare for real climate impacts that are, he says, inevitable. They have already been set in motion, no matter what we do with emissions. I spoke about it with John Englander. It's all in his new book, Moving to Higher Ground. John Englander, a pleasure. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
This book is very important. We need to stop talking about climate change and start talking about the climate emergency, I think. And your book, Moving to Higher Ground, does that. You are laying out very uncomfortable truths in this book, which is that we can't science our way out of this problem, that much of the warming is already baked in, and that we need to start having difficult conversations in coastal communities like Jacksonville about what's really going to happen and how we need to plan for it. So can you begin with that? Tell us what we can expect here in our part of Florida, Northeast Florida, in the coming decades when it comes to sea level rise and inland flooding too. And what the people that run this city really should be planning for.
Sure. Flooding, as we know from your recent hurricane experience a few years ago, flooding comes in different forms. It can come as a storm surge during a hurricane. It can come as heavy rainfall and runoff coming down the rivers and extreme tides. And those things can happen in combination. And then there's sea level rise. And we've only seen the earliest stages of sea level, so it still is kind of foreign to us. But we know that from geologic history, sea level moves up and down tens, even hundreds of feet. We are now in a new era. The ice is melting. The sea is rising. We have to get our heads around that. There's different kinds of flooding, and we have to take into account all of them.
Yeah. And in Northeast Florida, that's particularly true because we have so many communities built along the St. John's River. And people have accepted inland flooding, but I think they think about ocean rise as this really far-off problem still. Can you talk a little bit about that and why that has become a problem when it comes to planning to deal with climate change?
Sure. You know, in fact, in my book, in the new book, Moving to Higher Ground, I actually talk about an incident in Jacksonville. I was speaking at Naval Station Mayport. Actually, the conference was at the Hyatt Hotel downtown. And I was explaining how sea level rise is going to be this problem that we needed to consider. And then 2 weeks later, I think it was Hurricane Irma or Maria, I can't remember which one, mm-hmm. It was the same year, did exactly what I described as a hypothetical and came up the St. John's River and kind of flooded downtown Jacksonville, as you'll remember, for several weeks.
That was Irma, yeah.
But it was manifested that that's a storm surge. We tend to lose the fact that sea level's rising about a quarter of an inch a year right now, but it's accelerating. And just like the pandemic, it's the acceleration that we need to pay attention to, because that's going to catch us by surprise. Sea level is like a drip filling the bucket. We tend to ignore it. But the fact is, even at the current rate, we would have 1.5 feet of sea level rise this century, but it's accelerating. We could have 3 feet, 6 feet, or 9 feet of sea level rise this century. We need to start preparing for that quite differently than preparing for a storm, because sea level rise is permanent. It won't go down for thousands of years. Mm-hmm. It would require the ice sheets expanding. And right now, the ice sheets are getting smaller. The two ice sheets on Antarctica and Greenland are shrinking by the year. And because we've warmed the oceans, that is not going to stop. So we need to do three things. We need to be more sustainable, such as reducing greenhouse gases and slowing the warming. That's the first thing, and it's really important. Two is we need to start being more resilient for the kinds of weather and extreme events that we're having now. That's different than being sustainable, that's resiliency. But the third is we need to begin adapting for sea level rise, which is now unstoppable. We don't believe that because sea level hasn't been higher for 100,000 years, actually 122,000 years. But the last time it got higher was 25 feet above present. So we have to start designing now for something that we just have trouble imagining.
Yeah.
It's simple geologic history.
Right. People can't believe it. But 3 feet or 6 feet within this century, okay, people hear century and they think, well, that's 50, 70, 80 years away. Not necessarily. It could be, we're talking maybe a 20-year time frame, right?
Exactly. In fact, I think 30 years is an ideal horizon. That gets us to the mid-century, around the year 2050. And 30 years is a home mortgage. Most people think they'll be alive in 30 years, but they certainly do financing for 30 years. So it's a great time frame to look to the future. And in 30 years, the current projections say we could have a foot or two of sustained sea level rise. That's permanent sea level rise. That's not like a flood event, like a hurricane. So as you say, in 20 years, we could look to maybe 6, 10 inches of sea level rise. That's possible. But it's the acceleration that will surprise us. It's like a drip filling the bucket and the drip's getting faster and faster.
Okay, so if we know that we could be dealing with that amount of coastal water rise in Florida in that time window, what do states like Florida need to do that they're not doing to start the real hard conversation about how they're going to move people away from these threatened coastal areas?
Great question. So it is not just Florida, as you say. It's Georgia and South Carolina and Alabama and Mississippi and Texas and every coastal state and every coastal country, by the way. It's 10,000 coastal communities. And Charleston and Mobile are just as vulnerable as Florida are. But to your question, we need to start thinking bigger. We need to realize that sea level has been stable for 6,000 years, pretty much recorded human history, but now it's rising as the ice sheets are melting. So we've got to think bigger and out of sight of our human experience. But this is happening. We can see the flooding streets during king tide days all over the world getting worse than they've been in our lifetimes. So we need to think, my thought is we need to think short, medium, and long term. Short term is what do we do to reduce flood damage in the next year or so? Medium is a decade or two to start to change zoning. But long term is that mid-century and beyond. How do we look ahead to what's going to happen so that we can begin changing our building codes and zoning now while there's time to adapt?
What would be an example of that?
Well, for example, in Singapore or even in Boston, they are looking ahead to scenarios of up to 5 feet or more of sea level rise. And they're beginning to plan now for what do they need to do as short and intermediate steps to get to that long-term goal. We're not doing that in Florida, generally speaking. In fact, I'm not aware of anything in Florida that's looking beyond 2 feet of sea level rise. And if you can see the distant horizon better, you know the intermediate steps to get there. So what we tend to do is worry about the flood that can happen next week. Well, that would just be from rainfall or storms or king tide. Sea level rise can't be much higher next week. But looking out 10, 20, 30 years, as we've been talking about, we can see a world when sea level is several feet higher, depending on how warm we let the planet get.
And what advice do you have for people listening to this who own property at the beach, on the river, or even just people that own property in this area and are worried about the viability of living here past a certain point?
Sure. Well, different people will have different parameters. It depends upon their age. If they're 20 years old and starting out with a young family and going to borrow a 90% mortgage and that's all their savings, they should think one way. If somebody's in their 80s and has good investments and maybe more than one house and doesn't, you know, has a lot more flexibility and adaptability to flooding, they have an entirely different view. And of course, there's elevation above the water. And by the way, it's elevation more than distance from the shoreline. Because of storm surge, we tend to think of vulnerability as being close to the shore, when really it's height above sea level, even if it's miles inland. So I think that depending on somebody's vulnerability and age and their asset profile, whether they've got plenty of money to invest or whether they're really having to watch every dollar, will determine their attitude. But the first thing is to look at your vulnerability in terms of height above water level, because sea level will creep in through the marshes and the swamps and the estuaries and the rivers and even the porous rock. And we need to begin thinking about multiple sources of flooding. It's not just the storm hitting the coast. It's not just the king tide day, which follows the moon cycles. And it's not just from heavy rainfall and runoff. We're familiar with those things. It's the drip filling the bucket, as I call it, that sea level is just inching higher every few years that we tend not to look at. That's what we need to begin planning for, looking at how we can modify our house or perhaps sell it or, depending upon our situation, enjoy our time there, because sea level is not going to rise greatly in the next couple of years.
Now, amidst all this gloom and doom, you do see opportunities in the coming decades as we adapt to this new reality. What are those?
Well, if you think about it, once we understand that the melting ice caps on Greenland and Antarctica, which are happening faster every year, do promise to raise sea level, there's no question about that, there's going to be great opportunity as we begin to adapt. We're confusing climate change as just the greenhouse gas reduction and being resilient to the kind of weather now. But once we get through our heads, as I explain in the book, that sea level is going to be many feet higher, there's an opportunity. And it's nice to see the hope and positive opportunity ahead, whether we like it or not, that while trillions of dollars will be lost to sea level rising, there will be trillions of dollars of new building and new design and new construction and new communities, because we can't argue with the rising sea. And once we face the reality and look at it squarely, we'll realize that for every $1 trillion lost to the rising ocean, there will be a new $1 trillion of communities and infrastructure that can live in harmony with the rising ocean. It's an opportunity.
Well, I recommend everyone pick up your book. It's called Moving to Higher Ground, Rising Sea Level and the Path Forward. John Englander, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for sharing your insights with us.
Thank you, Melissa, for what you do. It's a pleasure. Anytime.
Well, that was a heavy discussion on Earth Day, but we don't want to be all negative with you. Let's talk about a celebration that's happening Saturday. Groundwork Jacksonville will partner with other environmental groups to present Earth Day, a celebration of stewardship. This is a free event designed to increase environmental awareness and it's for kids and adults. We'll learn things we can do to make our homes and landscape more eco-friendly. It's going to be a lot of fun. And right now we're pleased to welcome Chanel Davis Bryant, Program Manager at Groundwork Jacksonville. Hey, Chanel.
Hi, Melissa. Thank you so much for having me.
Good to have you. Also on the line, Javon Williams. He's CEO of Jax YouthWorks. Javon, hi.
Hey, good morning. Thank you so much for having me as well.
Okay, let's start with you, Chanel. Groundwork Jacksonville is leading this Earth Day event, a celebration of stewardship, from 10 a.m. to 1 Saturday. And you're also using it as a way to highlight your efforts to build the Emerald Trail, the green belt that you're putting up all around the city of Jacksonville. So what's on the agenda?
Yes, thank you, Melissa. So we're going to have lots of music and prize giveaways and demonstrations on native landscaping and soil and water conservation. Native Jacks, they're also going to be educating us on what a tree guild is, and our Green Team Youth Corps will be doing rain barrel demonstrations. So this is going to be a great opportunity for everyone to come out and see the trail as we're building it, how we're activating the S-line, and see the wonderful eco-installations we've done on the S-line so far. Duval Soil and Water, they will actually be presenting their plans for the Innovative Regeneration Park, which will be a green infrastructure and community stewardship project that will be built along the S-line. So we'll also have raffles. We'll be raffling off some really amazing prizes. So guests will arrive and they'll receive a passport, which will be their ticket for the raffle and for lunch. So we're giving away, raffling off a Regent St. Beach Cruiser, a complete rain barrel that you can install at your own home, and having Native Jacks install a tree guild. So there's over 50 opportunities to win a prize, and the first 100 participants will receive a $10 gift card for lunch at a local Springfield restaurant. We're giving them the gift cards. It's a way for us to give back to the community and local businesses while staying COVID safe. So we have some great food sponsors. There's Strings, Ice Capades, The Cookbook Restaurant, T-Posh, and Fred Cotton's Barbecue. They're really excited about it.
Wow, lots of prizes. That's great. I'll say this again in a few minutes, but this is all happening on the S-Line Biodiversity Corridor of the Emerald Trail. That's between Moncrief Road and Boulevard. You can park at the Christ Tabernacle Missionary Baptist Church. They are at 2335 North Davis Street. Javon, Jax YouthWorks will be on the scene. Tell us about your role.
Well, I am helping with the event management part. We are also that morning doing our Northside community cleanup. We are meeting promptly at 8:30 a.m. on 15th and Myrtle Avenue, right over by Bienson Art Gallery across the street from Stanton High School. And right after that, we will be tying in our cleanup with the stewardship event at 10 a.m. And we're looking forward to bringing our volunteers and our youth to come see what's happening on site, as well as partnering with other organizations on site.
So the idea, too, is to get people of all generations involved in this, Chanel, young people, adults, senior citizens. You want everyone to come out. But particularly, I think it's exciting that you're involving young people because I know in my own household, teenagers are very aware of these issues and even educate their parents. What about that?
Yes. So we have tons of partners that continuously work with youth. So Javon and myself with our Green Team Youth Corps, and we're still hiring for our summer apprenticeship for the Green Team Youth Corps. Jacksonville's Wild Program, their youth will be out doing animal demonstrations. And JAMS, Jacksonville Art and Music School, their youth will be out doing an art project with Bee Hotels. So the youth are really involved in the work that we do in all levels. And they're going to be out showcasing what they've learned. So the rain barrel demonstrations, some of our water and soil quality demonstrations, those are actually going to be hosted by our Green Team Youth Corps. So the youth, they know what they're doing. They're very involved, and they're really excited to be sharing what they've learned.
Can you share a little bit, both of you, about the Emerald Trail and how this event will really teach the public about what is going on with the Emerald Trail. For people that listen to this show, you may have heard me talk about this a lot. This is going to be a green belt that will go all around the city. You'll be able to walk it, bike it, rollerblade it if you want to, but it will have a lot of plants and flowers, and it will be a way to access different neighborhoods of the city on foot, and will increase biodiversity in the urban core. Lots of other cities have this. If you go up to Atlanta, they have a similar one. Javon, this is something that Groundwork Jacksonville is leading on, but a lot of other partners are working on this too. How important do you think the Emerald Trail is to the city of Jax?
I think this is extremely important to the city of Jacksonville, especially in the urban low-income communities. They definitely need to learn about how important it is to make sure that our soil and water is healthy. We want to make sure that we're able to grow food, and we're also going to pretty much put together a community herb and spice garden, bioswell, and things to pretty much help our local community, the immediate, the people that's in the immediate areas. We want to make sure that they are educated on how to take care of the soil and how to take care of the water. And I think that helps everyone in the grand scheme of things.
Chanel, how far along is the Emerald Trail? Tell us more about the timetable for completing this green belt.
Sure. Yeah. So the Emerald Trail is going to be a 10-year project. We're hoping to get it done sooner. And our wonderful partner, the City of Jacksonville, they're in line with us lockstep. So right now we're looking at starting the construction on our La Villa Link this summer. La Villa Link will connect the S line at State down to Stonewall. And we'll be starting construction on the McCoy's Creek Restoration Plan this summer as well. So we'll be breaking ground this summer on two key components of the Emerald Trail. During the Earth Day and Celebration Stewardship event, if you go to the Groundwork Jacksonville tent, you'll meet our community engagement coordinator, Gloria McNair, and she will be doing surveys on the design and what's important to the community for the design for the Hogan's Creek Restoration Project. So we're looking at starting that design phase soon. So if you want to give your input on how you think Hogan's Creek should look in the future, please visit our tent during the Earth Day event. And you'll also be entered into a raffle to win a $50 gift card for completing a survey. So we're chugging along on this project. Groundbreaking this year. We're going to be working on the design for the Hogan's Creek restoration this year as well. And we also will be working on a watershed plan for McCoy's and Hogan's Creek this year. So there's a lot of moving pieces happening this year. And that watershed plan will really inform what specific green infrastructure needs to happen within the urban core, within the
Yeah. And come on out Saturday from 10 to 1 at the S Line Biodiversity Corridor, part of the new Emerald Trail. You can park at Christ Tabernacle Missionary Baptist, 2335 North Davis Street, for this free Earth Day event. Chanel Davis Bryant, Groundwork Jax, Javon Williams, CEO at Jax Youth Works. Thanks to you both.
Thank you so much.
In a moment, some new music. Stick around for our JME Jams. We'll be right back.
Announcing Vickers Landing at Oak Bridge, bridging retirees with an all-new Ponte Vedra Beach community featuring new homes, a resort lifestyle, and a life plan for every stage of aging. Information at VickersLanding.com. Florida Cancer Specialists. Florida Cancer Specialists urges everyone not to postpone recommended screenings, such as mammograms, colonoscopies, or biopsies. Regular screenings save lives. More at flcancer.com/get-screened.
I'm Marco Werman. The World's Newsroom brings you the big picture stories and some other stuff.
Dear sir, I like words. I like fat, buttery words such as ooze, turpitude, gluttonous, toady. I like spurious, black is white words such as mortician, liquidate, tonsorial.
Join us and hear the world.
This afternoon at 3, here on WJCT News 89.9.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. Director Nicole Beckwith's new film, Together, Together, uses a story of gestational surrogacy to broaden the way fatherhood is traditionally depicted.
I've thought a lot more about being a dad than I've thought about making conversation with the person carrying my baby.
Right. Well, I'm nervous too.
That's next time on Here and Now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
This year, Hollywood is taking steps to make sure its biggest night of the year is as glamorous as you'd expect. Zoom has been nixed for the nominees. But for all the big screen stars Hollywood has lined up, this small screen award ceremony has many reaching for the off button. Who will make Oscars history this year? And can the Academy win back the audience it's lost? Next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, it's time again to explore some of the great music being created here on the First Coast through our Jacksonville Music Experience platform. It's time for some JME jams. Our music contributor, Matt Shaw, is on the line now with some picks for the month of April. Hey, Matt.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. So this is the time each month when we connect our listeners to the beautiful noise of Northeast Florida, and you do such a great job rounding up some of the top regional talent. What do you have this month?
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about today how DIY has kind of gone mainstream in the last few years in music, with home recording becoming more accessible and streaming services and YouTube offering platforms for artists to directly speak to their listeners. And I think today the most capable artists are really taking advantage of that new paradigm. So I picked out three artists who I think do several things really well. They're multi-talented. They have a singular vision for their music and the way it's presented. And they're all local. So I wanted to start with Sailor Goon. Goon, when she started releasing music a few years ago, she seemed to emerge fully formed. She has this really powerful voice, which she uses subtly, sometimes playfully, and she's got a really distinctive vision for how she wants to present her music. She releases videos that are super interesting, have surrealist elements to them. She has a new single called Way Down in Decatur, and it's a good showcase for her unique talent. So let's listen to a little Sailor Goon here.
Nice, kind of little jazzy.
Yeah, she is all over the place in a good way. Everything she releases is different and interesting. So I guess we can move on to something a little different. This is a new track from Sun Bears. If you've been around music scene here over the last decade, you've probably heard of Sun Bears. It's the solo project of multi-instrumentalist Jonathan Grant Berlin. He's a guy whose sonic fingerprints are all over the local music scene. He's a songwriter, producer. He mixes and masters for other musicians, even presses vinyl at his record pressing facility in Atlantic Beach. And he's got a new track called I Don't Know What I'm Doing Here. It's a really lush kind of indie folk song with a symphony of strings that he's incorporated into it. It's a really nice track. Let's listen to I Don't Know What I'm Doing Here.
In the end, I'll believe instead.
I love them. I love the Sun Bears. I'm so glad you included them this month. And we're getting a little tight on time, but you have one more cut.
Yeah, so this is the last one is from Animal Clinic. It's a solo project from multi-instrumentalist James Scott Rubia, top-notch songwriter. He messes around with synths and patches and samples. And he's got an album called Year of the Boar that he just re-released on a limited edition cassette, which is super cool. So let's listen to the song Social Club from Animal Clinic.
Nice, nice. Now, let me note, Matt, that all of the songs Matt curates for us are going to be added to the rotation on Electro Lounge Radio. That channel plays 24/7 on our HD4 as part of WJCT Public Media's Jacksonville Music Experience. So thanks, Matt.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Thanks for promoting local music.
Absolutely. And let's listen to some more of the local cuts Matt pulled for us today as we close with some more Sailor Goon. Again, you can listen to our Jacksonville Music Experience on the radio through our HD channels, through the WJCT app, or you can go to wjct.org/jacksmusic. And only at the Jacksonville Music Experience will you hear these local artists on regular rotation. So check it out. Enjoy the music, everyone. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. Have a great day.
Is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.